And welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour podcast, episode 274. I'm Dave Erickson. So glad you're listening this week. Today, we have a one-on-one interview with Josh Sprague, the founder and CEO of Orange Mud. What is Orange Mud? Well, it's hydration packs, also some accessories, namely a changing towel, which also serves as a seat cover. How many times have you had to take off your kit and you're like, how can I take this off and put on my other clothes and not show my junk, right? Well, they got this cool changing towel that has a Velcro belt or something like that around your waist so you can take things off, and then it doubles as something you can put on your seat so you can protect the seat of your car so you don't get all your stank on it. But they have these really interesting hydration packs where they go on, they mount on your back, and you can put a water bottle in there, and it doesn't move around much. Anyways, Wendy's going to do this one-on-one interview with Josh today, which should be pretty interesting, and you can learn more about the product at orangemud.com. And if you're interested in being a guest on the program, or you know someone who might make an interesting guest, whether it's an athlete, a product supplier, or I don't know, maybe a professional, let us know by sending us an email to endurancehour@gmail.com. We also love to hear your feedback on maybe some questions that you have about your training, your racing, maybe some of your recovery ideas. You can also leave us a voicemail by going to speakpipe.com/endurancehour. It's a nice little site where you can record from your cell phone, your smartphone, or your laptop or desktop. 90 seconds, just press record, leave us a voicemail, and we'll get it, and we can showcase it on the program in addition to any email questions you have. By the way, if you are looking to get a good deal on some of our training programs, we've got over 24 programs on Training Peaks. We're exclusively on Training Peaks right now. You can go to our website, endurancehour.com/33%, and then you'll get a code there that you can apply to any of our programs. It is a multi-use code. It'll give you 33% off any of our programs there. So if you're interested in how to swim faster in 30 days, you're looking maybe for a Olympic distance triathlon at the beginner level, maybe the advanced level. We have all distances and all levels in triathlon, and also some running programs, half marathon, full marathon, as well as some cycling programs there. So check it out. Go to endurancehour.com. You'll see on the right-hand side a blue square box that says our training plans available on Training Peaks. Click there. It'll go to our landing page with all our programs. Use the code that you got for free to take 33% off any of your programs. And if you do sign up for our newsletter, we will also send you on a weekly basis when we have podcasts, updates on what we've been doing with the podcast, who was on the last show, maybe some previews of what's coming up, also discounts to other partners we have in 2018 that give us discount codes to share with you, and then also some cool workouts of the day, swim workouts, and links to any articles that may be relevant on the topic or maybe in the world of endurance sports at the time. So that's our newsletter. Sign up on endurancehour.com. All right, let's get right to it on this episode of the Endurance Hour 274 with our one-on-one interview with the owner over at Orange Mud.
I'm interested in Orange Mud, really for the sake of, I never heard of it, to be honest, until you guys contacted us and I got the email. So I got to do my own little research. I know that you have a podcast yourself and you have a website and everything looks really cool. And I just want to start by you telling us a little bit about Orange Mud and how it came into life.
Sure. So yeah, so we started the business about 6 years ago. And Orange Mud came about because I wanted to make a pack that would hold a water bottle, my basic nutrition, wallet and keys, cash for the beer garden afterwards. And that was kind of the whole premise. So it was after training for Ironman in St. George, where I was just frustrated with handhelds and waste flask and all these other little gadgets, you know?
So Ironman St. George, that was a few years ago, because they haven't had that in a long time.
Yeah, I did the very first one, which was 2011, I think is what it was.
Yeah, I would have guessed 2010. And
yeah, so it was right after that is when I made it. So, because yeah, training for that race was basically, I had this loop behind my house when we lived in SoCal that I would run all the time, and I stashed a bottle in the bushes. And one day, it was about a mile and a half loop, and one day I was out for a run and I saw a coyote and homeless guy at the same time on the kind of west side of this loop. And almost the same time. And as I came back around and I took a drink from my water bottle, it tasted like either The dude drank from it, peed on it. The coyote peed on it. I don't know what happened. Something happened. And it was so frustrating. And again, I've always hated waste packs and handhelds. So it was kind of that frustration that lingered for maybe probably about 6-7 months before I finally was like, all right, let me see if I can build something. So I destroyed a gun holster, a fanny pack, like a bottle-based pack, some tie-down straps, and sewed together this real crude concoction. And that's what kind of was the first prototype, if you will, of the Hydro Quiver. It looked like it was worth about a quarter, maybe 50 cents. But I told my wife, I'm like, hey, you know, let's start a company. Probably cost $50,000. Worst case scenario, we'll have two backpacks worth $25,000 each, perfectly designed for us. And best case, we can actually sell them. And, you know, we do have the first challenge of making this thing look like it's worth more than, you know, 50 cents. And it took a while, like 11 months, basically, to get the pack to market. But when we got the first pack to market, we started our business in January 2012. We actually launched it at the Soma Half Ironman in Arizona that October. And then the November Ironman Arizona. And then it's just kind of taken off from there. So big mix of trail runners and triathletes that buy our gear, and road runners, of course, too. But yeah, it's evolved from that very first base product into, we got around maybe 300 to 500 SKUs. I quit counting, but it's a lot anymore.
Yeah, I just think it's a cool to hear, because there's so many different products out on the market, not just hydration packs, but just so many different gear products for endurance athletes. I'm always curious, like, what gets someone motivated to start a business like that? Now, 11 months to me isn't actually a long time. What did you do before that? And do you still do that, whatever you did?
Yeah, so I ran as a VP of a medical device manufacturing company. Okay. So ran a 170 person company that made basically all sorts of implantable devices. Mm-hmm. It's always I always told people it's the implants you don't want is what we made, the shoulders and pacemakers and knees and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I did that actually for the first 3 years. And my wife was an attorney, and she did that for the first maybe, I think it was about year and a half, 2 years in before she quit her job to run Orange Mud. And then I quit at about 3 years in. But yeah, we definitely kept our day jobs to help pay for development, inventory, like learning. Mm-hmm. Is this even a viable thing? I told her it would probably take 10 products before I could quit my job. And mm-hmm. it was 14 is when we actually, or when I actually put in my notice. And it's, you know, it's worked ever since. So it's not without its frustration or scariness, but it's worked ever since.
No, I think that's fantastic how you did it. You just created your own for your own use, and then it kind of developed from there. When did you move to Colorado?
About 2.5 years ago now, April of 2 years ago.
What brought you to Colorado?
You know, we were done with the traffic of California. It was brutal. Taxes, you know, as you always hear, taxes are a lot, but I don't think a lot of people maybe appreciate it until you own a business, and mm-hmm. and then you really feel the impact of taxation. Right. So I called my bookkeeper in September of 2015, doing some year end planning, and I was like, hey, you know, he told me how much we were roughly owe in taxes that year, and I was like, okay, well, if we move somewhere like, I don't know, Colorado, what would it save us? And he's like, oh, before we do math, it'd save you about $50,000. And I was like, really?
Dang.
Before we do math? So we listed our house 3 days later. It took about 6 months to finally sell and move. But we moved out here and haven't looked back. So California is a great place. We still love California. But yeah, I mean, between, you know, the taxes, we're looking at getting a, our first bigger warehouse. And we were initially going to get one in Golden is where we're looking at in Colorado. And I just felt weird putting a warehouse for our products like next to a freeway with smog and enormous amounts of traffic, which mm-hmm. was what we would have probably been doing in California unless we were going to move where we lived. So that was kind of a big step where it was to me like wrong to have an outdoor lifestyle business like we have in the heart of traffic. So. That's why we thought Colorado would be great, because we'll be able to get a good spot by trails, mm-hmm. you know, no traffic and, you know, all different. So,
and I think athletic population, whether it's California, depending on where you live in California, or Colorado, being surrounded by that type of athleticism, mm-hmm. trails as well as triathletes, ultra runners and triathletes is important. So you kind of went on to my next question. I was thinking was, do you have a specific retail store, Orange Mud retail store, or is it all stock in a warehouse and you distribute to retailers?
Yeah, so we sell to retailers. We don't have our own store per se. We have our own online store, of course, mm-hmm. at orangemud.com. But yeah, we're in over 400 retail stores around the country. Almost every Fleet Feet carries our products, which are there's 175 of those. And we're distributed in 15 countries, I think, now. So so we have a really strong online as well as brick and mortar footprint and global. So yeah, it's been crazy
that's,
to see.
That's pretty cool. Now let's go back into your development. When you were frustrated with the handhelds and the waist packs, which I have been doing triathlon for 28 years, I've done ultra running for 2 years. It's interesting. I was not so much into the hydration pack that I wore. This was back in 2011, 2012, 2013 time. I was just naive. I didn't know what the best one to carry was, and it irritated me a lot. The handheld, I was okay with, I think, because I was just so used to running with my dogs. I was used to having something in my hand. And the waist pack, I never really liked. Now, did you experiment with other hydration packs on the market while you were trying to create your own?
Yeah, so I raced a lot of adventure racing, mountain bike racing, triathlon, and I mean, I've done enormous amounts of trail running over the years. So that's why we made this, is that I was so frustrated. Like my garage, let's put it this way. I've literally had a sales guy used to work for me. He would call me and be like, "Hey dude, we have our Boy Scout troop doing a backpacking trip for 4 days. Can I come over to your garage and borrow packs for everybody?" That's my garage. Uh-huh. Like before Orange Bud, I've still had more, I've literally had enough backpacks to outfit a Boy Scout troop, like for different sizes of kids, you name it. I have a pack. So, cause I don't get rid of my packs. I've always collected them. It's kind of hard, you know, and you've done some special race or some special trip or whatever. So, and as an adventure racer who's done over 100 adventure races, you learn to buy the best gear you can find, because every bit that you like adventure racing isn't, it's not self-supported, or you are self-supported, really. You know, you don't have all these aid stations like you do in ultra. So you can't get away with, you know, going super minimal skimpy. So you always have all this high end gear. So I've always had enormous amounts of packs that from pretty much everybody. And I kind of had the ones I hated the least and the ones I hated the most, but all of them had little features that I always enjoyed. So, so in the initial design, yeah, there wasn't really anything like what we did on the market. So that was kind of a little confusing, obviously. But I took a little bit of, like, I like the zipper. I like this type of material. I like this type of web. Mm-hmm. I like this type of mesh. And you kind of take all these little pieces from all these other packs. And you just, you know, figure out how it's going to work. But, you know, ours is obviously very different than anybody, because we put a bottle back behind your head. And that concept really came about from watching my teammates' backs while we were running in adventure races. And I would see their backs, upper backs, it wouldn't move. It just kind of, your upper back just kind of bounces just a little bit, but your like thoracic, kind of your middle of your spine, it kind of has a slight twist, and then your hips kind of go in a circle almost. So by keeping the pack up really high, you eliminated this whole other, all this movement. There was just no movement there. So that was where that first design started with. And then as time went on, especially once I started designing a bladder pack, that one took me 2 years. I quit making it for a while because I just didn't feel it was the best on the market. And I wasn't going to make a bladder pack unless I could make one better than everything else. So, I literally spent a year developing it, and then I stopped because it was like 80% there. And then it took a while, and then I like had a design dream, you'd call it one night. I'm like, I got an idea. And then that's where it kind of got kicked back off. So everything has definitely started from another concept, as with anything in life, you know, it's unbelievable how many packs I've ran with. That's for sure. And it never ends. I continue to buy our competitors' packs when they come out and run with them. And, you know, if something's better, I want to make sure we can one up it in the next version.
Mm-hmm. So what pack would you recommend for like a hundred mile, someone running 100 miles.
Our endurance pack is awesome. It's the number one pack for endurance, ultras. It's just fantastic. So, It's $135, carries a 2-liter 70-ounce bladder, holds plus-size phones up front, which everybody wants to take selfies or whatever anymore. Lots of nutrition. I just used it in Leadville 100, last week? I think it was just last week. I DNF'd, in fairness.
You did the 100 trail run.
Yeah, okay. I DNF'd at mile 68. I twisted my ankle at 58, and I tried pushing on, but it just wasn't happening. So, but I used it in the 100-mile run, and then I also used basically it's a new version of a similar product that I'm designing the weekend before that in the 100-mile mountain bike. So it works great for both run and ride.
Cool. What kind of pockets and like does it carry gear and jackets and stuff like that?
Everything you need for an ultra. Basically any ultra in the U.S. it's almost perfect for.
Okay.
If you go to Europe or somewhere where you have the bigger kit requirements, our Adventure Pack 12 liters is awesome. But the Endurance Pack, we sell it. It's the number one pack that we sell at mountain bike races. It's number one at ultra races. It's number one at Ironman. It's really everywhere we go. It's always the number one pack because it's so tiny. It's the shortest 2-liter bladder pack on the market. So it's still great if you're just, maybe you're just a road runner and you're doing 2 and 3 hour runs. This way you don't have to ever refill, but you can carry all your essentials regardless of what weather you're in.
That's what
and
I like.
If you're down there in Georgia where it's wicked hot, and humid, it's still so short, it's going to get all the heat away. And then with this one, I designed, this was especially the version 2.0 that's on the market. I made some special tweaks for petite ladies, but ironically, the tweaks also work for wider chested guys and gals and larger chested gals too. So it's got a really cool elastic sternum slider harness that works fantastic across pretty much every frame.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. What sets you, Orange Mud Hydration Packs, different from the rest of the popular brands?
So number one is stability. That's the number one focus that we have on every single design. And then durability. But on the stability, when it comes down to the fabrics that we use, we choose a balance of stretchy and non-stretchy fabrics. A lot of brands, they choose these all stretchy fabrics and they feel really cool when you put them on in the store. Maybe they feel cool when you're running with a little itty bitty soft flask up front. But as soon as you do a race and you have to put a bladder in the back because, you know, it takes 3 or 4 hours and you need more fluid, the bladders will often slosh around and drive you crazy. So we design packs for training and racing and with the intent of I want them to perform equally in both. And so that's really a number one that sets us apart as we stabilize fluid always, I believe, better than anybody else out there. And then our packs are built really tough. They're actually designed to last. I can't stand spending money on gear that falls apart so fast. Shoes as is wear out so fast. You know, I want people to buy one of our packs and use it for 5 years, 10 years. I don't want it to be a seasonal thing where they're going to be like, okay, that Orange Mud pack's really cool, but I got to buy a new one next year. I want them to buy a new one because they want to give their old one away and get the new model. That I'm cool with, but I don't want it to ever wear out.
Right. No, I love
it. Those are the two.
So we had mentioned in a previous podcast that we were going to bring you on the show. And I had one of our listeners sent me a Facebook message testimonial. He said, I heard you mention Orange Mud on the podcast. I finally found a hydration pack I can use. Thank you. And then I asked him what he likes about it. And he says, it fits well, doesn't rub and chafe, rides high on the back, liquid doesn't slosh around.
Perfect. Well,
so,
there you go.
I mean, exactly what you just said. So I thought that was some good feedback. Again, I haven't used it yet, but you're sparking my curiosity. I want to go get one now.
Yeah. No, it's really fun. And that's the beautiful part of me doing all the races I still do. Is that I get to ask people, like last week in Leadville 100 run, you know, at 4 a.m, we're taking off on the run and I'm running next to a guy with our gear vest on. And I ask him like, hey man, what do you think of that pack? He's like, oh, this thing's awesome. And let me tell you about this, whatever he starts. We get like this crazy, awesome, passionate follower. I think people are surprised that it works so well. So it's always neat for me to ask these people, you know, what do you think of it? And then they start giving me the rundown. I'm like, yeah, I know. Thanks. You know, I designed it. So I really appreciate your feedback and you don't have to give me the lecture on it, especially as we're running, but it makes it where it's extra special to design these things. And, you know, especially after doing all these races over the years, it's just so amazing to be able to go out and be still competing and yet seeing people use our gear. I mean, it's just such a cool thing. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
What was your most challenging issue you had when you were starting this company?
You know, finding manufacturers is brutal. Yeah, that's that was the hardest part for sure. You know, part of it is my own ignorance. I didn't know how to design backpacks. You know, I kind of knew how to sew a little bit, but you know, not like how to make a backpack. Nor did I have industrial grade machines. So it was hard. You know, I'd reach out to manufacturers and I'd say, okay, here's what I want to do, and they're like, well, most of them wouldn't respond to you actually. So I, like in the beginning, I reached out to 42 factories off, you know, just web searches, and this was just in Southern California, and so I had this whole mantra, I'm going to make it American made, and it's going to be all awesome. And what I kind of found out is that there just aren't very many American made factories that want consumer stuff. They want to make medical device stuff. They want to make military stuff. And that's by design. I mean, I can't fault them. It's very expensive to make things in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So they know it's only a matter of time before you go overseas if you make it in the U.S. Because the consumer, everybody wants to say, oh, I love made in the USA. But the reality is you love made in the USA if it's the same cost as made in wherever, somewhere overseas. You know, most people aren't going to spend $300 on a backpack that would be normally only $100-$150. So that was very complicated in the beginning because I was just convinced that, you know, we could do this. But I just had a lot of them just tell me, no, we're not interested. No, mm-hmm. Good luck. I don't want to make your stuff. And I literally was telling people like, hey, I'll pay. Like, what's it cost to get a prototype? $5,000? $10,000? I'll give it to you. Mm-hmm. What do you want? I mean, I had to tell people what I would give them, and I had no idea. But again, I come from making spine implants and all these super awesome, crazy widgets, you know, in our business. And I was just, I would take orders for $1,000 to make a prototype, you know, from I don't care how, it was like some little guy out of his house, you know, and we were a great big company. But so I just couldn't believe that I couldn't even get people to respond to me, or they would be rude to me. Like, yeah, call China. That's uh-huh. usually the first answer. So that was a very, very frustrating, lag that we had in the beginning. And it took a while, and I kind of stumbled on a guy that prototyped backpacks, and he helped me out. And this guy, Mike Berge, he was awesome. And, yeah, he got me up and going, and that kind of got the whole footprint of things moving forward and finding, you know, the first factory, which was not very good, but it was a good start. And then the second, which was great. And they're still partners of ours here in the U.S., which we still use. We don't make everything in the U.S. anymore. It just doesn't work like that, but, mm-hmm. but we still make a decent bit. And then again, we stumbled onto another one as time grew, but yeah, number one definitely is finding a good factory. That was just insane. It was truly insane. So
it's good that you followed your goal and your dream. You know, it's like yeah. anything. If you have a goal and a dream, keep going until you can't go anymore with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we did. We started with US, and then as we started to scale things up, maybe 4 years ago, we did a US-Mexico hybrid to try to get cost in check more, because it was stopping any international sales growth for uh-huh. us. We didn't have margins for it. And then as that started to scale and our numbers continued to scale further and further, it hit a point where we had to go overseas. We had an 87% increase over 3 years of cost of goods. 87%. Who just swallows that? And that's mm-hmm. what I was doing. I was just swallowing. I wasn't just going to pass it along and be like, cool, consumer. Now the backpack costs $200, mm-hmm. even though it was $100 before. You know, things just don't work out like that. So, and we knew it was only going to continue to go up. And again, I couldn't fault my factories. It's just the nature of the beast. It's just the U.S. manufacturing. It's hard. So we did finally go overseas, and now we have U.S. as well as partners in really Vietnam specifically. And it's been fantastic. I mean, our both partners are still amazing suppliers to us, and it's leveled out craziness. That's for sure.
Good.
Get to travel overseas too, which is fun.
Tell us a little bit about the name, how you created the name Orange Mud.
Yeah, so my middle name is Clay, and I always thought that was really cool. And when my boy was born, which was like 3 months before we started Orange Mud, my wife and I argued a bunch about trying to, I wanted to name him Clay because I always thought it was a cool name, but I didn't really get to use it since it was my middle name. Mm-hmm. And I lost the argument. So we didn't name him Clay, we named him Jax instead. But it was 3 months later where, you know, came up with this idea for the HydroQuiver, and I was like, okay, cool. We're going to start a company, and by the way, it's going to have my name in it. And she was like, whatever, knock yourself out. And but I couldn't make it work. Like, I bought 43 domain names that first night. And like, you know, all these other clays, Seven Clay, Clay Vine, Burn Clay, all like I've got names for vineyards and bike shops and all these other things down the road, that I still own, but it's something that it just wasn't working. But I grew up a Kansas country boy and the clay is everywhere back there. Normally gray, which is in the color scheme of our logo. But when you go down to like other parts of the country, Georgia, Oklahoma, Arizona, South Kansas, you find this orangish red clay. So that's where the clay is a mud, orange mud. It just happened to, it was like five glasses of wine later. That's how it actually happened.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it took a while, but it was like probably three, four hours and five glasses of wine. And yeah, orange mud was one of the later ones I finally purchased that night. And then the next morning, I mean, I knew that was probably the best one. It was just a cool name. And it was the next morning I ran it by my wife and some friends that were over and everybody's like, oh yeah, orange mud. That's a good sticky name, if you will. So
I think it is too.
It held. Yeah. So yeah, been that way ever since.
That's awesome. I like the name. It's just like, it sparks your curiosity. Orange mud. What's orange mud?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's fun. Like say if we're at Ironman or something, you know, you see these people, you know, if they don't stop by our booth, they walk by and you generally see people move their lips quietly three times saying orange mud three times. It's really weird, but you can tell they're like orange mud. And maybe they don't know what it is or whatever the case, but it's something that's so common at any event. You see people, they'll say it usually three times under their breath as they walk by. And I'm like, well, they'll probably remember that.
Yeah, so totally.
We've been lucky. I mean, I think names are a little bit dumb luck sometimes. And, you know, it's half the battle. Sometimes it's just remembering a company name. I mean, there's plenty of brands I've found where I wanted to go buy their product afterwards and I couldn't figure out how to friggin' spell it. And that's insane. Where I think everybody knows how to spell orange and mud. So, yeah, it's been good.
Do you have any upcoming expos that you're going to this year? Do you have a standard expo thing that you do every year? What's that all about?
Yeah, we do a lot. We just finished the whole Leadville series. So we're a sponsor of all their races. But we're going to be at Ironman Arizona coming up next. I think that's the next one. So we've got actually a little break. So Ironman Arizona, November, Rock and Roll Las Vegas, which will be really fun. Also in November. I don't think much else until kind of the spring gets kicked back around, but our summers are crazy. We've been at all kinds of races. Yeah.
That's
it's crazy. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah.
Well, speaking of races, I mean, you just said you did Leadville 100. You're probably on a little break right now. Do you primarily focus on ultra running right now, or do you do triathlons still or adventure races?
Yeah. So yeah, I wish I could
do you have time races. For anything?
Yeah. Yeah, I make the time. You know, it's the reason why we do this is to experience the outdoors. So I do. But yeah, like this summer I raced what's called Leadman. It's the Leadville Trail Marathon, 50-mile mountain bike, 100-mile mountain bike, the 10K the next morning, which is kind of silly, and then the 100-mile run. And I did complete all except for the run. But I was going to be racing the Hawk 50-mile in 2 weeks in Kansas, which I love their series there. I've done all distances, the 26-mile through 100. But I'm on a little bit injured reserve right now, so I'm going to volunteer instead.
Okay.
But yeah, I've done Dirty Kansas this year, a couple of the gravel bike races. Taking a little bit of break from tries just because I love dirt. So for me, next year is all about gravel bike racing and then a couple mountain bike races. But maybe I'll probably do a 100-mile trail run in Kansas at the Hawk next year is what I'm thinking. But that'll be the only one. It'll just be that one, and then everything else will be on the mountain bike or gravel bike.
Was this your first attempt at Leadman?
No, this was second. Last year, I DNF'd at the exact same aid station. I finished all the other races. Last year, I broke four of my metatarsals in my right foot. And
what?
Then this year, I rolled my ankle in my left foot. So, yeah, so I'm taking a break I don't even know if I'm going to do Leadville 100 again. I love the race. I love the venue. I love the people. I love the organizers, the town. I love everything about it. And we'll be a sponsor of the series again. Uh-huh. But I'm not one that DNFs things ever. And I've done hundreds and hundreds of races. And it just breaks my heart to DNF 2 years in a row. And like this year, it kind of robbed my will to fight on that one. I'm like, you know what? I think I'm just going to take a break from it. Maybe 3-4 years from now, maybe. But I won't do the 100 run next year. I do know that for a fact. I'm taking a break.
I mean, it's good to, I mean, you dropped out too because of an injury. You can't predict injury. You can't train and predict that you're going to get injured.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if there's a good reason to drop out, that's kind of a good reason to drop out. What was it? Twin Lakes? Twin Lakes coming back over?
It's the aid station after Twin Lakes. It's called Half Pipe.
Okay, Half Pipe. I've been to Leadville a few times. I've paced a few times. I haven't done it yet. I've done the only ultra I've done. Well, not only one. I did Run Rabbit Run was my first 50-miler in Steamboat. Yeah. And then the next year I attempted 100. I got pulled off at mile 70. That was hard. Because I didn't quit. I knew the race director. I didn't make that aid station at 65, but I still got there and I turned around and I came back and my crew called him and said, Wendy's still out on the course. And he goes, you got to pull her off. It was a bittersweet end. And so of course the next year I had to go back and do the 100 at Rabbit Run. And then I did a couple, I did Pocatello 50 and I did the Leadville 50. That was my best one was the Leadville 50. And then I moved to Georgia. I was going to try to make it another year of ultras before I moved to Georgia. It didn't work out that way. But I do have my heart still into trail running. I still love Ironman though too. I kind of haven't been able to quite balance an ultra run and an Ironman the same year, but that's my goal in life.
Yeah. Well, and ironically, it's weird. I find that training for ultras is easier than training for Ironman. Ironman like takes over your life, and ultras, it's amazing. I most people I've known that have said the same that have done both sports are like, yeah, you know, 100 miles. Don't get me wrong, 100 miles is really hard, but training wise, it seems like it's easier to tackle than you know the multi-sport requirements of freaking Ironman.
I agree because when I was doing, especially the second year I trained for the 100. I try to maintain a little bit of biking and running. I did do one triathlon that year just to maintain my streak of doing triathlons for 27 years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, ultra run, you know, the big training's on the weekend. And then, you know, it's like recover Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday, and you have one sport. It's definitely a different beast. And you have to have the mindset to go, you know, I have that mindset. I can go all day and all night. That's just how I'm wired. You have to be wired that way.
Yeah, for sure. And I do enjoy that part of it. It's kind of fun, you know, like to me, I mean, that's where I've always loved endurance sports. And my favorite time is the nighttime.
Yeah.
So it's where it really sucked at 2 a.m. I missed that cutoff, you know, the last 2 years in a row, mile 68, because that's normally my favorite time of day. But it definitely was not my favorite time of day in the last 2 years. And love the 100. It just, I don't know, that course is... It's a funky course. It's very runnable, but it's got, you know, it's got Hope Pass, and that's just huge. And I don't know if it beats you up, drains you, and then spits you out that back end where it shouldn't be that hard for the last 40 miles. But yeah, I haven't got to enjoy my normal happy place. So,
well, it's like Kona. Yeah. Kona Ironman is just a different type of beast than any other Ironman. You put the competition, you put the heat, you put the humidity, you just put the world championship. I mean, there's just a lot of factors in an Ironman like in Kona that's different than any Ironman, just like Leadville. Everyone knows of the extreme Leadville 100 at altitude, Hope Pass, all that fun stuff. Do you have any advice for any newbie out there who's training for their first 50 or 100 miler?
Yeah, just get your nutrition right. I believe you can do anything with the right nutrition. Uh-huh. You know, Leadville is a tricky one. It will beat you up and spit you out, but there's a lot of other 100 milers out there that may be a better starting place. Uh-huh. You know, I think Leadville is great. I love it, but the cutoffs are really tight. And I don't think people appreciate how tight they are, given the Hope Pass beast in the middle of it. But yeah, get your nutrition right. And you seriously, most ultras, you can almost walk the whole thing. I did last year. I mean, I did the Hawk 3 weeks after I broke 4 metatarsals last year and I finished it, but I run walked it and for 100 miles and with 4 broken metatarsals, I used trekking poles and I just kind of motored through it. But again, I still finished under the cutoff barely, but I did it in 31 and a half hours. but that literally was, I called it a mall walk strategy. I was already signed up anyway. Well, kind of, I was actually signed up for the 50, but I felt good enough that I went for the 100. But I believe, like, in that race, nutrition was great. I stayed sharp all day, was able to do math. I like to calculate mile pace and requirements to get to the next aid and all that. Will I run? Cause that shows me how well I'm processing nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I firmly believe if with the right nutrition, taking care of your feet, which is always big, mm-hmm. With, you know, good squirrel nut butter or trail toes or one of them good, you know, lubes out there, between those two and then just managing electrolytes, you can do anything for any amount of time. And I've seen it, you know, large athletes, itty bitty athletes, mm-hmm. you know, people missing limbs. I mean, everybody can do these things. It's seriously, your grandmother can do this, you know, it's
right.
And your grandmother can probably beat you. That's the crazy part. But, there's so many people that can go out there and do amazing things in these races, but all they have to do is get their nutrition right.
Yeah,
and
it's the same thing with Ironman.
It's not that bad.
If you get your nutrition right, you're going to have a great, fun,
yep.
successful day. If your nutrition goes bad, you're going to struggle. It really does come down to nutrition. And even in the training process, you know, you're going to have good days and bad days in training. Most mm-hmm. of the time, I know I've been doing it long enough, but I know the days I've struggled, whether it's a race or in training, it goes back to my nutrition. I didn't feel right the day before. I didn't feel right race day, whatever the case may be. I always know. I'm like, oh, stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I got to do another one because I want to fix my nutrition.
Yeah.
And that sometimes keeps me motivated year after year after year, is to say, okay, you know, I've done 19 Ironman, but I'm still trying to figure out the Ironman race. I still try to figure out that nutrition component of it.
Triathlon is, I believe, the hardest to get nutrition right. I think it's just that position of flat, bent over, standing up. Uh-huh. And when you stand up off the bike, all of a sudden you feel like, whoa, my stomach hasn't been good. I didn't know this.
Exactly.
Like, I literally dry heaved an entire 13.1 miles in my first half Ironman.
That's brutal.
I remember just getting off the bike. I'm like, wow, my stomach felt like I had a basketball in it. I mean, it was just full of air. I tried this new hydration mix that I bought in the expo, which was dumb. But at that time I was doing so much racing and adventure racing wise. I'm like, it's only half Ironman. How hard can this really be? But it was horrible. I mean, it was the worst thing. I remember I had my fingers so far down in my throat trying to puke. People going by like, are you okay? I'm like, oh, I'm fine. But, oh, yeah, freaking Ironman. Ironman is a very frustrating sport to me. It's the one I've never done well with nutrition in. And it's just, it's frustrating. And I've done over 100 mountain bike races, over 100 adventure races, and tons of trail races. And you know, normally those all go pretty flawlessly, but Ironman is definitely the one that it's, I think it's the hardest for everybody to get right nutrition wise.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare you ever hear of someone like, wow, my stomach was amazing all day for my Ironman race. That's pretty rare.
It's very
that you ever
rare.
Hear that.
It's
yeah.
very rare. It happened to me once.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say my nutrition was perfect all day or my stomach was perfect all day, but I did have one Ironman where everything clicked. And I was too kind of naive to know why that happened. Like I can't go back and replicate it. I'm like, it just happened, you know?
Yeah.
It was the right attitude. I had the right attitude. The weather conditions were great for me. It just happened. And I wanted to happen again. I wanted to keep happening. And I'm like, nah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, it's tough. But, you know, and nutrition always changes too. You know, this year, I've been doing keto only for like 2 months, and I thought it was probably stupid to do this right in the middle of the apex of training and race season, but you know, whatever, I've never been that smart. So I kind of did it, but so I actually worked on backing off my liquid calories mm-hmm. for a change. And I was actually eating 2 half strips of bacon every hour for like the first 11 hours of the run last weekend. And I was flawless. And then I switched to homemade guacamole when I put too much lime and a little too much salt in it, which was great the night before when I made it. But during the race, when I'm trying to suck it out of a Ziploc bag, running up a freaking mountain, I just couldn't process it right. It wasn't processing. I just didn't enjoy the taste. It was too salty. Uh-huh. So I wasn't eating that. And then I didn't have the right caloric mix because I'd mixed everything light because I was planning on substituting some real food in. And so there's definitely a little bit of a mess that I made my own self this year, where I've been really flawless on infinite nutrition for the last 3 years. I hardly have ever had a bad race. And I didn't have a bad race this run, but I definitely sabotaged myself a little bit by screwing with everything, trying to dial down calories and increase real food and nutrition is it's just never ending.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, you're doing keto. Keto works for some people. Keto doesn't work for other people. You know, there's just so many different plans people can follow. There's so many different choices. Find one that works for you and stick with it. If it works for you, great. If it doesn't, change it and do something else. I like the avocado idea, though.
Yeah.
That, wow, with salt.
Oh, it's
I'm
awesome.
I'm like, wow, I think that's something I want to try. I never
I did it last year.
That sounds really good.
Oh, man, I did it last year for Level 100 and the Hawk 100, and I think I did it in Dirty Kansas, and it worked amazing. This year was the only year I used this spicy Cajun, this kind of Creole salt that I have that I use for a lot of chicken and fish, typically. And yeah, I just put too much in. Like I said, normally it's fantastic, but you just have to find a little bit of balance. Salt's good, but not too much when you're out there. You know, running an ultra, you know, 12 hours into a race. But yeah, a buddy of mine, Nick, and I watched him in a race eat avocados and blueberries the whole time.
Nick Clark.
And when I was watching him eat avocados, I was like, well, why would you eat avocados when you could eat guacamole? So hence why I started doing this. Yeah. And yeah, it works fantastic.
It sounds good. I want to go eat one right now.
Yeah.
I have two downstairs. Okay. Nice. What's been your biggest achievement? Either professionally or athletically or... whatever.
Yeah. You know, I would say, honestly, I would definitely say it's just getting Orange Mud to a place that is becoming more and more a staple in the endurance community. I mean, that was the whole goal of making our products is to grow in multiple verticals, being triathlon, ultra, and mountain bike. And yeah, just to actually see the success of that has been, you know, it's kind of amazing in itself. It's not an easy thing to achieve. It took a lot of work and a lot of sleepless nights, but that's definitely been the sweetest part. I mean, it makes it extra special when, you know, you're able to do this. You basically tie in your passion for living of this endurance, not just racing, but training and just exploring the outdoors to having your own brand and then seeing your kids enjoy it too. And like our kids, you know, they've had Orange Mud tattoos on. We have little temporary tattoos.
Nice.
And they've been wearing them the last week. And you know, my little boy, he won the little like quarter mile run in Leadville that they did before the 10K the other day. And I firmly believe he does this. And my daughter too, they both love it because of seeing what we do with, you know, designing this stuff.
Yeah.
So, and they see our activity and engagement in the sport. So yeah, it's definitely been, I think, just, you know, making the brand successful. You know, it's easy to design a product. I always tell people, you know, products or designs are, that's really the easy part. It's getting people to actually buy them and finding people to say, here is why it's different and unique and why you should try this. That's always the hardest part of starting a business that I've found. You know, I think we found a decent magic for that, or maybe a little bit of a formula anyway.
So tell us about your ambassador team.
So yeah, we have an awesome ambassador team. We are close to 400 people right now. And this is global. It's all around the world. And so we started the ambassador team. My social media manager, Holly, she used to be our manager. She suggested this years ago, probably four and a half, five years ago now. And she's like, yeah, you should have an ambassador team. I was like, well, why? Why would anybody want to be an ambassador for us? I don't understand this. I'd never heard of an ambassador program. I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, well, whatever. If you want to start with, I don't know, 10 people, I guess, let's do it. And I think we started with like 15 or something. And they all of them are still ambassadors for us. They've been amazing since the beginning. And but then as time grew on, we continued to add and it's gotten to be more and more challenging because we have so many amazing, passionate people that follow our brand and use our products that, you know, we have a lot of thousands of people apply for our ambassador program. And you look at it, you're like, why shouldn't everybody be an ambassador? They love our products. Why should I say no? I don't even understand. So it's been tricky as time has grown on, but what we really found in the beginning, they were so influential in the beginning to help, you know, be our sounding board in design, and they still are. But in the beginning, it was essential. I mean, it was extremely important. And I would post an idea of like, hey, what do you guys think of this? And they'd say, hey, that sucks, or you should do this instead. So they were just super essential with helping us to figure out you know, our basically grow our design team is really was a huge part. And then, of course, helping to spread the word organically was a big piece. But the whole focus of our brand has always been growing kind of the grassroots side. You know, we don't intend to be this massive brand. That's not, that's just not at the culture here. So we wanted to grow grassroots and find people that were passionate and kind of keep moving forward that way. And you know, we've actually hired ambassadors to like our current social media manager. He was one of our ambassadors and we promoted him to manage our social. We've got another ambassador we just hired as a rep in the Northeast and another one on the West Coast. And so it's been a great resource for not only friends and helping them all find, you know, different races and support each other at races and events and whatnot around the world. But it's kind of grown to this whole kind of business, social team, fun thing tie-in. So yeah, it's been great.
That's awesome. So yeah. What's the future look like for Orange Mud?
Hopefully really good. So yeah, no, we're on a great growth path.
Good.
Yeah, we've continued to grow a ton. Our international expansion has been a big growth for us. And that's really exciting, you know, because basically each of the countries that we sell to our distributors, they basically are Orange Mud. You know, I mean, they're making a big investment into our brand and that's kind of special to see, you know, that someone believes that much in your brand to really toe it all on the line and invest into buying inventory and building a country. Because I know what it takes on our side. I mean, it took a lot of work to get people to test the products and use it. And because we take a different approach to a lot of things. And so I think that's been one of the most exciting things this year. Our international growth is up. I don't even know the math, probably a couple thousand percent. It's a lot.
Cool.
It's insane. So our major plans for growth is definitely international. A lot in the endurance riding community. Gravel biking has been a huge growth factor for us, and we're going to continue to invest more in products there. We have a new pack coming out in about 5 months that's really designed a lot for them, but it also, fortunately, works just as well in the ultra running space and triathlon space. And yeah, we're just going to keep growing it and keep having more fun with the packs and keep living the dream, I guess.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's all good with me.
How can people,
some fun stuff.
Yeah. How can people find you guys? Social. I know you're on social. I know your website, but if you just want to let us know.
Yeah. Orangemud.com and then social media anywhere. We're on everything, at Orange Mud.
Yep. I've seen you on Instagram. I've seen you on Twitter.
Yeah,
as well
Facebook.
As Facebook. So that's great.
Yeah, Google Plus, Pinterest.
Oh gosh, I haven't been on Google Price Plus. There's so many social media things.
Yeah.
I haven't done Google Plus in a long time.
Yeah, it's kind of dying off. We see very little engagement there anymore. We still post to it, but it's like I don't even know why.
Yeah. Yeah. LinkedIn.
Yeah, LinkedIn too.
I mean, I use LinkedIn. I go in phases, but I don't know what that's all about. It's really Instagram's the way to go.
Instagram it's our love. It's what's really fun. If you search hashtag Orange Mud, and even to help find a pack, you know, for your listeners to help find a pack that works for them, because we have a lot of different options. I always encourage people go to Instagram, search hashtag Orange Mud. Last time I looked, there were, I think, 55,000 posts that people have posted with hashtag Orange Mud.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And you can find different people that have your body, people that have your body type, and, you know, see what pack they're wearing. Ask them, you know, hey, I've been looking at a new pack, you know, maybe I'm large chested, wide chested, maybe I'm, you know, 90 pounds, you know, whatever your build is, you can find somebody on there that's using our packs, or lots of people using our packs of whatever your body type is. And, I always tell people to go on there and then ask people questions that way. You can always ask us, of course, and we'll gladly help, but at least that way you get the non-biased, feedback from users. So, and then of course, you know, we always love to see your smiling faces. So make sure you tag us, hashtag Orange Mud.
And we'll add all the social media links in the show notes on endurancehour.com episode 274. You'll find that on endurancehour.com/episode274. So there you go. That's our episode for today. Love to hear your feedback on if you've used the product. Maybe you have another product that you think might be better, or some of the other products that have nothing to do with hydration, but something out there that you're thinking about that might be of value to our audience. We'd love to hear from you. So endurancehour@gmail.com, as well as our voicemail option, speakpipe.com/endurancehour. For Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Have a great week of racing, training, or recovery. We hope to see you back here next time. Adios.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Come, baby. There's my fever lost, but so what's I'm begging you save a little soul. Come, baby. Last night they loved you, opening doors and pulling some strings. Hey,